Hello. This is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. You have a minute to read the task.
Chocolate, the treat that makes life sweeter around the world, carries a story of exotic places, long journeys, and small family farms where the delicate crop grows. As you peel back a chocolate wrapper or open a box, you're uncovering the seed of a fruit that grows on tropical trees, and joining people around the world who have turned to this mysterious food for ritual and enjoyment for the past 4,000 years. Chocolate comes from the fruit of the cacao tree, known as Theobroma cacao. The tree grows on small farms in remote tropical areas in West Africa, Southeast Asia, and Central and South America. These fruit trees flourish in hot, rainy climates just 20 degrees north and south of the equator. Because these conditions have to be just right, cocoa farming is a difficult job that requires care and precision by a well-trained farmer. The fruit of the cacao tree is a football-shaped pod that comes in a variety of colors. Inside each pod is a sweet, white, fruity pulp that covers 50 to 60 seeds. It is from these seeds that chocolate is made. Once the pods are ripe, they are harvested in the same way they have been gathered for thousands of years, by hand. The trunks of the trees are too soft to climb, so farmers use long-handled instruments to cut the pods from the trees. After collecting the pods, each one is split open. Then the farmer scoops out the white pulp and separates the seeds, commonly known as cocoa beans. The beans are covered with banana leaves or burlap while they ferment in the pulp. After fermenting, the beans are uncovered and dried in the hot sun. Both fermentation and drying are extremely important steps in helping chocolate develop its unique flavor. When the beans have achieved maximum dryness, it's time to go to market. The farmer puts them in burlap sacks in which they will be sold and shipped to chocolate factories around the world. Recently, scientific evidence has indicated that cocoa and cocoa-containing products may be associated with lower risk of cardiovascular or heart disease. Studies also have confirmed that eating chocolate may be associated with improved well-being. Research suggests that learning to work favorite foods, like chocolate, into a diet may help people achieve and maintain healthy eating behaviors.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Chocolate, the treat that makes life sweeter around the world, carries a story of exotic places, long journeys, and small family farms where the delicate crop grows. As you peel back a chocolate wrapper or open a box, you're uncovering the seed of a fruit that grows on tropical trees and joining people around the world who have turned to this mysterious food for ritual and enjoyment for the past 4,000 years. Chocolate comes from the fruit of the cacao tree, known as Theobroma cacao. The tree grows on small farms in remote tropical areas in West Africa, Southeast Asia, and Central and South America. These fruit trees flourish in hot, rainy climates just 20 degrees north and south of the equator. Because these conditions have to be just right, cocoa farming is a difficult job that requires care and precision by a well-trained farmer. The fruit of the cacao tree is a football-shaped pod that comes in a variety of colors. Inside each pod is a sweet, white, fruity pulp that covers 50 to 60 seeds. It is from these seeds that chocolate is made. Once the pods are ripe, they are harvested in the same way they have been gathered for thousands of years, by hand. The trunks of the trees are too soft to climb, so farmers use long-handled instruments to cut the pods from the trees. After collecting the pods, each one is split open. Then the farmer scoops out the white pulp and separates the seeds, commonly known as cocoa beans. The beans are covered with banana leaves or burlap while they ferment in the pulp. After fermenting, the beans are uncovered and dried in the hot sun. Both fermentation and drying are extremely important steps in helping chocolate develop its unique flavor. When the beans have achieved maximum dryness, it's time to go to market. The farmer puts them in burlap sacks in which they will be sold and shipped to chocolate factories around the world. Recently, scientific evidence has indicated that cocoa and cocoa-containing products may be associated with lower risk of cardiovascular or heart disease. Studies also have confirmed that eating chocolate may be associated with improved well-being. Research suggests that learning to work favorite foods, like chocolate, into a diet may help people achieve and maintain healthy eating behaviors.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. You have a minute to read the task. Copenhagen frequently tops rankings of the world's happiest, most livable and best designed cities. While Denmark's capital may not be perfect, its successes in a few key areas provide teaching points for metropolises around the world. Family is central to Danish life. According to BBC News, parents typically receive an entire year of maternity or paternity leave, half fully paid and half up to 90% paid. Culturally, there's little pressure to work overtime, leaving people more time to spend with their families. While all of this leads to much higher taxes, Denmark has the highest income tax in the world, Danes are willing to bear the cost. The importance of stress-free living in Danish culture is reflected in the sustainable infrastructure of its capital city. Copenhagen is friendly to pedestrians and perhaps even friendlier to cyclists. Nearly 480,000 people, about 40% of residents, commute by bike each day, causing some to call Copenhagen the number one cycling city in the world. The city's bike sharing program provides bikes to locals and visitors for free, and Copenhagen has a network of about 350 kilometers of off-road bike paths, complete with traffic lights. Plus, there's the metro and an extensive bus system. Residents usually prefer to cycle or take public transport because there are deterrents to driving in Denmark, namely some of the highest petrol prices in the world and a petrol tax. Sustainable architecture is also central to city policy. Most new buildings, for example, are required to have areas covered with plants and vegetation, and most old buildings have been adapted to meet these standards. In addition, city planners say that in the next 5 years, 90% of residents will be able to walk to a green space in just 15 minutes. Copenhagen is also trying to use alternative sources of energy, purchasing some wind power as it strives to be carbon neutral by 2025. One of the biggest contributing factors to Copenhagen's happiness and livability is purely cultural. Copenhageners know how to have a good time while also taking care of the environment. Copenhagen consumes more organic food than any other place in Europe and also has more Michelin stars than any other Scandinavian city, 14 to be exact. Leading the city's recent food and drink renaissance is Noma, a local food-obsessed establishment named the world's best restaurant 2 years in a row. The Danes' love of nature and concern for the environment means that Copenhagen serves as an example to other major cities of environmentally sustainable living in the 21st century.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Copenhagen frequently tops rankings of the world's happiest, most livable and best designed cities. While Denmark's capital may not be perfect, its successes in a few key areas provide teaching points for metropolises around the world. Family is central to Danish life. According to BBC News, parents typically receive an entire year of maternity or paternity leave, half fully paid and half up to 90% paid. Culturally, there's little pressure to work overtime, leaving people more time to spend with their families. While all of this leads to much higher taxes, Denmark has the highest income tax in the world, Danes are willing to bear the cost.
The importance of stress-free living in Danish culture is reflected in the sustainable infrastructure of its capital city. Copenhagen is friendly to pedestrians and perhaps even friendlier to cyclists. Nearly 480,000 people, about 40% of residents, commute by bike each day, causing some to call Copenhagen the number one cycling city in the world. The city's bike sharing program provides bikes to locals and visitors for free, and Copenhagen has a network of about 350 kilometers of off-road bike paths, complete with traffic lights. Plus, there's the metro and an extensive bus system. Residents usually prefer to cycle or take public transport because there are deterrents to driving in Denmark, namely some of the highest petrol prices in the world and a petrol tax. Sustainable architecture is also central to city policy. Most new buildings, for example, are required to have areas covered with plants and vegetation, and most old buildings have been adapted to meet these standards. In addition, city planners say that in the next 5 years, 90% of residents will be able to walk to a green space in just 15 minutes. Copenhagen is also trying to use alternative sources of energy, purchasing some wind power as it strives to be carbon neutral by 2025. One of the biggest contributing factors to Copenhagen's happiness and livability is purely cultural. Copenhageners know how to have a good time while also taking care of the environment. Copenhagen consumes more organic food than any other place in Europe and also has more Michelin stars than any other Scandinavian city, 14 to be exact. Leading the city's recent food and drink renaissance is Noma, a local food-obsessed establishment named the world's best restaurant 2 years in a row. The Danes' love of nature and concern for the environment means that Copenhagen serves as an example to other major cities of environmentally sustainable living in the 21st century. There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 2. Go on to task 3. You have a minute to read the task.
Talk to me a little bit about what it is that you do. You're teaching chemistry? That's right. I'm a high school chemistry teacher, and I work in one of Australia's biggest, and if I may say so, one of the best schools. We were voted number one in Australia by one of the most reputable newspapers this year. So it's Australia's largest school as well. We've got 3,600 students of all ages, and we've got four campuses, including one in China. We're massive, absolutely massive, and it's a wonderful place to work.
And you're teaching chemistry. Is food part of the curriculum everywhere in Australia? I mean, do you actually teach food as part of what you do in your courses?
Well, food isn't explicitly in the curriculum right now. It was. There used to be a whole unit on food in the Australian chemistry curriculum. It's been taken out, but now people are bringing it back in. So as of 2016, the new curriculum will have a whole food topic in it again. And I think it's really important to bring some relevance into chemistry, because chemistry is one of those really abstract subjects that students go into it knowing almost nothing about. You know, that they may have heard of an acid and a base. They may have seen combustion, but there are lots of these abstract concepts which are just so disconnected from their everyday lives. So if you bring food into chemistry, food is something we can all relate to. And food is like a, I think, a very good hook, if you like. It's a means through which to learn chemistry, because we can all relate to food. So I'm a big fan of putting food into the chemistry curriculum, and I try to do that where I can at the moment. But I'm excited that in 2016, food will be formally back in the curriculum, and it'll just make the subject so much more relevant.
Yeah, so I'll bite. I'll be the first to admit science was not my subject in school. And my mom's a science teacher, so that's not good.
Oh.
But it really wasn't. I was more of a liberal arts guy. So I'm a foodie. Make chemistry interesting to me.
Make chemistry interesting to you. Chemistry is the study of change and chemical change. So chemistry comprises literally everything that we are made of. It's everything that we do, everything that we eat, particularly one branch of chemistry called organic chemistry. And that's where I'm a particular fan. So organic chemistry is the study of all foods, medicines, vitamins, hormones, fuels, plastics. It's the clothes. It's the study of all the useful things that we use in life, because organic chemistry is the study of living things.
Where does chemistry come into place when we talk about eating? I mean, are we talking flavors, cooking?
Absolutely. The chemistry of cooking is everywhere. We've got the Maillard reaction, which produces that beautiful brown sear on the outside of a steak and gives you that flavor as well. You've also got the most, the flavors, which come from different fruits and different meats. The flavors are all interesting chemical compounds as well. And really, cooking is just applied chemistry. I really see them as just two ends of the same spectrum, really. The cooking is just applied chemistry.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Talk to me a little bit about what it is that you do. You're teaching chemistry?
That's right. I'm a high school chemistry teacher, and I work in one of Australia's biggest, and if I may say so, one of the best schools. We were voted number one in Australia by one of the most reputable newspapers this year. So it's Australia's largest school as well. We've got 3,600 students of all ages, and we've got four campuses, including one in China. We're massive, absolutely massive, and it's a wonderful place to work.
And you're teaching chemistry. Is food part of the curriculum everywhere in Australia? I mean, do you actually teach food as part of what you do in your courses?
Well, food isn't explicitly in the curriculum right now. It was. There used to be a whole unit on food in the Australian chemistry curriculum. It's been taken out, but now people are bringing it back in. So as of 2016, the new curriculum will have a whole food topic in it again. And I think it's really important to bring some relevance into chemistry, because chemistry is one of those really abstract subjects that students go into it knowing almost nothing about. You know, that they may have heard of an acid and a base, they may have seen combustion, but there are lots of these abstract concepts which are just so disconnected from their everyday lives. So if you bring food into chemistry, food is something we can all relate to. And food is like a, I think, a very good hook, if you like. It's a means through which to learn chemistry, because we can all relate to food. So I'm a big fan of putting food into the chemistry curriculum, and I try to do that where I can at the moment. But I'm excited that in 2016, food will be formally back in the curriculum, and it'll just make the subject so much more relevant.
Yeah, so I'll bite. I will be the first to admit science was not my subject in school. And my mom's a science teacher, so that's not good.
Oh.
But it really wasn't. I was more of a liberal arts kid. So I'm a foodie. Make chemistry interesting to me.
Make chemistry interesting to you. Chemistry is the study of change and chemical change. So chemistry comprises literally everything that we are made of. It's everything that we do, everything that we eat, particularly one branch of chemistry called organic chemistry. And that's where I'm... That's why I'm a particular fan. So organic chemistry is the study of all foods, medicines, vitamins, hormones, fuels, plastics. It's the clothes. It's the study of all the useful things that we use in life, because organic chemistry is the study of living things.
Where does chemistry come into place when we talk about eating? I mean, are we talking flavors, cooking?
Absolutely. The chemistry of cooking is everywhere. We've got the Maillard reaction, which produces that beautiful brown sear on the outside of a steak and gives you that flavor as well. You've also got the flavors, which come from different fruits and different meats. The flavors are all interesting chemical compounds as well. And really, cooking is just applied chemistry. I really see them as just two ends of the same spectrum, really. The cooking is just applied chemistry.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.